Natural Solutions with Dr. J, your source for time-tested and cutting-edge natural medicine approaches to optimize your health, with your host, Dr. J. Sordian. In this episode, we are going to have a reading of one of the chapters out of Outsmarting the Dementia Epidemic, 7 Key Memory Care Actions to Avoid Alzheimer's and Successfully Keep Your Brain Safe, Sharp, and Sexy into the Future. Outsmarting the Dementia Epidemic, Chapter 1. Dementia, Alzheimer's, and What Brain Degeneration Looks Like. Do you have any of these? What does early degeneration of the brain look like? The primary signs of brain degeneration include hypertension, high blood pressure, poor digestion, allergies, food or otherwise, acid reflux, dry eyes and mouth, sexual dysfunction, erectile dysfunction, hormone imbalance, increased cholesterol, incontinence, short-term memory issues, memory problems, reduced ability to learn, mood swings, depression, lowered attention span, fatigue, lowered creativity, sleep problems, sleepiness when reading, reduced comprehension, inability to handle motion, like those crazy kids, and autoimmune disorders. Various items are marked with an asterisk. These can also be observed with unequal brain development as well as brain degeneration. Ask yourself honestly, do you recognize yourself in any of these? If you have recurring symptoms, they can become permanent issues. So the symptoms that start out as annoyances can turn into more serious symptoms and issues that are very hard to turn around, if they can be turned around. This is just like a car with bad shock absorbers that will get worse and worse with time. The ride will become more and more uncomfortable, with teeth jarring shakes when hitting potholes. Well, like the evidence of the breaking down car, your bodily symptoms that go on and on point to chronicity. What is it like to be a person with Alzheimer's? Coma and Alzheimer's, how they compare. Do you ever wonder what is going inside the head and heart and mind of a person with moderate or advanced dementia? If you have ever worked with someone who has this condition, you'll begin to wonder why they behave as they do. In a slightly similar vein, if you have ever been around someone who is in a coma, well, that person is obviously unable to move around very much or to interact with the people around them. They are bedridden and can hardly move. People sitting next to someone in a coma can speak and talk to them, but does the person in the coma hear them? People who have had the experience of coming out of a coma have said that they were able to actually hear voices, but they cannot communicate back. Alzheimer's, on the other hand, can be a situation in which a person is unable to speak or is using a language known only to themselves. The individual can move around, can typically eat, and depending on the severity, is able to play games, able to follow some directions, occasionally go on field trips, do exercises and group-guided games, do art projects, and listen to music. In spite of this seeming to be functional in many ways and getting up and moving around, the individual with severe Alzheimer's and dementia may actually be in a coma-like state internally. How could this be? Have you ever driven in a car for hours and hours on a long trip? Perhaps listening to music, having an intense conversation with someone else, or being quiet and noticing the scenery go by? You have that ability to drive for hours and hours and hours on end, and arriving at the destination going, "Wow, that was really fast. I don't remember much of any of the driving." This is a clear indication of how we are able to operate on automatic pilot, our breathing, our heart beating, and numerous other functions in the body operate automatically without our having to consciously think or remember to do so. So, the individual with Alzheimer's and dementia is able to do a number of tasks in this automatic fashion, unlike the person in a coma. Of course, the person in a coma may be able to breathe and the heart may work fine, but they're not actually able to move their bodies and get their muscles to move. So, all this being said, it still leaves us with the question, what is going on inside the brain, heart, and mind of the person with Alzheimer's when they themselves cannot describe it very well or are unable to speak to us at all? And even if they are speaking to us, is it a real, ongoing, awakened state reality to them? Or is it a rote process where they are speaking and talking to us, and from the outside it looks normal, but from the inside nothing is going on? Certainly, the experts in the field state that working with the person with Alzheimer's keeps you in the moment. Keeping present and focused in the now is a key to interacting with the Alzheimer's patient, even when you yourself may be thinking about future events and consequences. If you are at their level, you are definitely in the moment and not thinking about the future or the past. So, the above description may be what is going on inside the mind, head, and heart of the person with Alzheimer's, and even perhaps quite similar to the experience of an infant or toddler, except that they are taking in and remembering the experiences, or at least we assume as much, even though they also do not have the verbal capability to express it in words. My experience of the, quote, Alzheimer's mind, unquote. I personally had this experience many years ago, having had an injury to one side of my head. For approximately 4 hours, I experienced what I can only assume was an Alzheimer's-like experience. It was a complete blank for me, in spite of my interacting with my wife, Seagal, doctors and staff at the emergency room, and others. My interactions and, quote, conversations, unquote, with others during these 4 hours are known to me only due to Seagal's telling me what happened, what I said, how she answered back, how I kept repeating the same question over and over again with no apparent comprehension of what she was answering, how I answered the doctor's questions to see if I was oriented in time and space, and what was done in the ER itself. The beginning. I remember clearly looking into the mirror in our small apartment bathroom, seeing blood running out of a gash in my forehead. Seagal asked what happened, and I said, maybe I was hit in the head by a so-called homeless person, or maybe I hit my head on the metal security gate as I opened it to enter the apartment building, or maybe I hit myself on some low-hanging limb over the sidewalk, or even maybe it was an alien abduction. Okay, well, it was in Berkeley, California, and there had been a spate of people being mugged randomly with baseball bats. At the time of the blow to the head, I think I had a list of 11 possible causes because I had no clear memory of what really happened. This happened around 11 p.m. Earlier, Seagal had visited me in a coffee shop on Telegraph Avenue where I was reading a book called The Tibetan Book of Living and Dying. I remember that just before I left the coffee shop, I had finished a chapter that ended with the statement that, as humans, we have in common the reality that we never know when we will die. Ironic. So, during the interaction in the bathroom, she said that maybe I had a concussion and that I should maybe lie down. I said, no, you shouldn't lie down with a concussion. That much I knew of my medical training. I also asked her, do we have medical insurance? She said, yes, but we have a high deductible. I said something like, oh, that is not good. Do we have medical insurance? And this apparently went on for some time, as her answer did not register in my brain and caused me to stop asking the question for at least 15 more rounds. The middle. We went to the emergency room at Alta Bates Hospital, about 10 minutes from the apartment. I knew the area very well and had also worked as a clerk in the Alta Bates Hospital ER in the mid-80s. Thus, I was the one to direct us by car to the ER, although I have no recollection of that. I was functioning as the navigator, but have no memory of having done so. When we arrived in the ER, there was the usual intake triage, cleanup of the wound, the ER doctor sewing up my gash, the bandages applied, and the medications prescribed. At least I was told this was what happened, and I could see the stitches later. The end. What I do remember was suddenly waking up around 3 a.m. or so in the waiting room of the ER. My eyes opened and I saw the clock on the wall. I looked at Sigal and asked, "Do we have medical insurance?" She answered, "Yes, but we have a high deductible." I didn't ask the question again, and she then knew that something had changed with me. As for me, it just seemed like I had been asleep and had some glimpses of an odd dream I had had. Is it really like, quote, Alzheimer's mind, unquote? Can I say that this is what it is like for someone with significant dementia or Alzheimer's? No. But it did give me a glimpse at what it might be like, given that my behaviors on the outside were similar to what one might see with someone with Alzheimer's or dementia. If it is similar, perhaps this might also be likened to sleepwalking or walking around in a, quote, movement functional coma, unquote. People who sleepwalk have told me that they did not remember what had occurred while they were out doing things around town in their pajamas. But those people woke up and were able to function fully the next day. People with significant dementia or Alzheimer's may be living a life that is something like sleepwalking. While we don't know for sure what is going on inside the head and life of someone with advanced dementia and Alzheimer's, we can still look at the symptoms and conditions we listed as related to them. At first, you might wonder what brain degeneration has to do with the list of symptoms or conditions. Many of them make sense, like short-term memory issues, reduced ability to learn, lowered attention span, lowered creativity, sleepiness when reading, reduced comprehension, depression, fatigue, and inability to handle motion. These all make sense because they are easy to associate with brain function, or lack thereof. But what about the other things? Hypertension, poor digestion, sexual dysfunction, hormone imbalance, incontinence, mood swings, depression, and fatigue? Even if you are a cyber hypochondriac, brain degeneration is not the first thing that comes to mind with these conditions. But indeed, they could be a sign of brain degeneration as well as due to other physiological causes. This is because your brain regulates all of the functions of your body in conjunction with the endocrine, hormone, and immunological systems. Different types of dementia are associated with particular types of brain cell damage in particular regions of the brain. And these regions have different functions. To learn more about these functions, read Superbrain: Maximize Your Brain Health for a Better Life. Please note also that the items in the list marked with an asterisk are also seen with an imbalanced development of the two hemispheres of the brain. Not only can that imbalance cause those symptoms, but it could also help create the foundation for brain degeneration, like dementia and Alzheimer's, not to mention ADD, ADHD, autism spectrum disorder, late speaking, and other conditions of developmental dysfunction syndrome. Now, go back to the list of markers at the top of this chapter. Again, it is worth repeating. The bottom line question, though, becomes, do you recognize yourself in any of these? Recurring symptoms and conditions can become permanent issues. So the symptoms that start out as annoyances, can turn into more serious symptoms and issues that are very hard to turn around, if they can be turned around. So try to get healthy naturally. Your alternative is a chemical respirator of endless medication. And those medications don't work forever due to tolerance and declining efficacy. And what might these be? As of 2015, the Food and Drug Administration has approved two types of drugs specifically to treat symptoms of Alzheimer's disease: cholinesterase inhibitors and memantine. The three approved cholinesterase inhibitors include the following. Donepezil, Aricept, is approved to treat all stages of Alzheimer's. It can cause delirium. Rivastigmine, Exelon, is approved to treat mild to moderate Alzheimer's. Galantamine, Razadine, is approved to treat mild to moderate Alzheimer's. They all lose effectiveness over time, just like recurring symptoms are an indication that the underlying cause is not changing and function continues to deteriorate. Fill out this survey of brain health to see where you stand. Enter the appropriate number, 0, 1, 2, or 3, with 0 as least or never and 3 as most and always. Is your memory noticeably declining? Are you having a hard time remembering names and phone numbers? Is your ability to focus noticeably declining? Has it become harder for you to learn things? How often do you have a hard time remembering your appointments? Is your temperament getting worse in general? Are you losing your attention span endurance? How often do you find yourself down or sad? How often do you fatigue when driving compared to the past? How often do you walk into rooms and forget why? How often do you pick up your cell phone and forget why? Total up the number. And if your total is 6 or more, I suggest that you get evaluated more in depth. See Chapter 12. If you're interested in finding out more about how you or your relatives can avoid dementia, buy the book, Outsmarting the Dementia Epidemic: 7 Key Memory Care Actions to Avoid Alzheimer's and Successfully Keep Your Brain Safe, Sharp, and Sexy into the Future, by going to OutsmartingDementia.com. That's OutsmartingDementia.com. If you'd like to learn more about how to get an appointment with Dr. Sordian, please call the Redwood Clinic at 510-849-1176. And for information, go to theredwoodclinic.com. Thank you.